The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio Remote Edition. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. Welcome to this Tuesday afternoon edition of The Dory Monson Show. Jay Inslee press conference at 1 o'clock. We'll bring that to you live. Trump press conference at 2:30. We're going to bring that to you live, and we have some breaking news. I'm just going to drop in for a couple of minutes here, but the president has just started speaking in a conference room at the White House about small business relief, and I know that this is hugely important. If you are an employee who's been laid off or furloughed, if you are a business owner who's trying to keep your business alive, just for a couple minutes here, breaking news, he has just started speaking, and let's drop in to the White House.
We're looking forward to speaking with the top CEOs from the banking industry and finance industry. Some of you I know very well and great relationships with. You do an incredible job, respected all over the world. You're the biggest and the best. And we're meeting to further deepen our partnership to help American families, workers, and small businesses during the pandemic, which is something that nobody ever dreamed of. You know, I say it and I say it a lot. We had the greatest economy in history, the greatest economy that we've ever had, the greatest economy that anybody's ever had. And then one day they said, you got to close it down, close the country, because we have to get rid of the plague. And that's exactly what we had, is a plague. And we're seeing light at the end of the tunnel. You see it, I see it. And I think we're going to go like a rocket ship once we get back to business. There's a lot of pent-up energy and demand. But I also want to thank Secretary Mnuchin for the incredible job he's done in conceiving many of these ideas. We talked late into the night, and he and his staff have been incredible. Administrator Carranza, Larry Kudlow, and my daughter Ivanka Trump, who just wants to have people working. That's what I gave her, lots of options, and what do you like? And she created over 15 million jobs, working with some of you, but working with the biggest companies in the world. They were training like nobody's ever seen, but she started off with a goal of 500,000 jobs, and now she's up to over 15 million. As our nation wages the war against the invisible enemy, we're grateful for the many ways in which your companies have answered the call to join our national endeavor. Thank you for donating tens of millions of dollars.
Having a little technical glitch there at the White House. I will jump in on it. Donald Trump looks frustrated that they had a technical audio glitch. I just wanted to hear a couple minutes of that because he is updating the small business loan program. And one thing I will say, you know, the focus on getting the economy back, it needs to be greater, but it's been awfully darn good at the federal level with the incredible speed with which they've put together the small business loan program and the checks to the unemployed. That's been very impressive. Now, when Governor Inslee talks at 1 o'clock this afternoon, I'd like to hear something, anything, along those lines of what he's going to, because I have not heard one thing from the governor, except that he vetoed a couple of bills that would have exploded our budget even more, but he still is growing our budget at a ridiculous level this year. I have not heard one thing from the governor about what he wants to do economically for Washingtonians. And that's what we need to start hearing. We get it. We have a shared sacrifice. We are all staying at home, or as many of us as possible. A lot of people are staying at home because they're out of work now. And while the president and the Treasury Secretary, Mnuchin, while they've been tirelessly trying to figure out how to keep businesses afloat and money in the pockets of the unemployed, I have not heard one thing from our governor at the state level. And there certainly is, you know, an underlying bedrock foundational difference in, you know, one person's a businessman and one person's a career bureaucrat. And career bureaucrats, all they want to do is expand government. But I hope, and I have no idea. We haven't been told the subject of Jay Inslee's 1 o'clock press conference. We will bring it to you live. But at some point, the governor has to talk about the state economy. And if you want some ideas, Mr. Governor, you still got 49 minutes to get these into your teleprompter. I got some ideas for the people of the state. How about for the hundreds of thousands of people that you have colluded with Sound Transit and your party to rip off with car tabs that are illegally calculated? $400, $600 for cars that aren't worth but a fraction of that. The voters voted in November for $30 tabs. It has withstood the first couple of court challenges, and you still will not give people the will of the voters? Has there ever been a more important time to tell hundreds of thousands of people in the counties that have been hit the hardest, and everybody's being hit hard, but both in terms of number of cases and the economic damage, King, Pierce, Snohomish have been hit the hardest. And those are the three counties that make up this taxing district. Why don't you say, you know what, I'm going to get, if you got a car tab bill in the mail this week and you haven't paid it yet, forget about it. We're going to do $30 car tabs like the voters wanted. We are going to do the will of the people. That's what Gary Locke did when the Supreme Court flipped $30 tab vote 20 years ago. Gary Locke went to the legislature and said, hey, this is what the voters want. I don't like it, but that's what they want. We're here to do the will of the voters. Why can't Jay Inslee do that? Give us some money back. You want another idea? You want to save $200 million like that, Mr. Governor? It's time to shut down Evergreen State College. Evergreen State is bankrupt, or it's going bankrupt. It's about to be bankrupt. The enrollment is plummeting. You let that whack job president, George Bridges, he let the inmates run the asylum down there. Evergreen State's the most radical university in the United States, according to U.S. News and World Report. It has become a useless $200 million blight on our budget. Make the announcement today, Governor, that the taxpayers are no longer going to prop up and subsidize this failing institution. So there's a lot of things you can do without any problem at all to start getting money back in the hands of people who are economically devastated right now. So that's my request to the governor in advance of this 1 o'clock press conference. Start focusing on the economy. Start telling us how you're going to get us back to work. We're all in on the mitigation. We're staying at home as best we can. We're flattening the curve as we're being asked to do. We are doing the health things, but the economic toll is ginormous for people. And you, Mr. Governor, at least the president, is talking all the time about firing the economy back up and saving businesses. Not one word from Jay Inslee on that. Are those going on the air, Andrew? Those little chimes?
There. I don't hear anything.
Oh, you don't? Oh, good. Okay. All right, somebody's chatting on my computer, and every time it pops up, I hear a chime in my headphones. But if it's not on the air, I'm just going to ignore it. Thanks. So that's my call to the governor. We're all in. We're helping out. We're doing our part. We're staying at home. We're washing our hands. A lot of people are paying an unbelievable price economically. And so you tell us what your goal is as governor. It better not be just putting in an income tax. Because that's all I'm hearing from Democrats. We got to have a special session and we need an income tax in Washington, which would be economic suicide. So we'll see. Inslee at 1 o'clock. The president will go back to his press conference at 2:30. This, not go back to it. This is a a thing from a meeting room at the White House that I just popped in on, but it'll be a big press conference at 2:30 this afternoon. All right, with all of that is mere prelude, let's get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. I told you so.
In fact, we exclusively told you about how we're being lied to about security at these COVID-19 quarantine sites. This is where people like Dow Constantine have used this crisis to do an end run around the people to start implementing some dramatically expanded homelessness spending. But it's all in the guise of COVID-19. And one of them is this motel, this travel lodge that they bought down in Kent for $4 million. And as we told you exclusively last week, that the security guards at these places, including the tent hospital up on the soccer fields in Shoreline and elsewhere, that we have public officials like Leo Floor with King County, like Dow Constantine, and they've all told us that, oh, no, people aren't going to be able to walk away and infect the communities. And they were lying. The security guards have not been instructed to stop them. I found that out exclusively. I also talked to cops, and the cops have no reason to stop a person who's walking away from one of those facilities. And our friend Amy Clancy, with our news partners, Cairo 7, she had a great story about what's going on at this Kent motel.
At least three times in a single day last week, the man in the surveillance video, with his face mask pulled down, left his quarantine room at the former Econo Lodge on Central Avenue North, walked across the street to a Shell station, bought beer, then returned to quarantine.
The risk is what we're all trying to prevent is that we...
Okay, can we talk about that for a minute? So they buy beer and then walk back to quarantine. These are not dry facilities, apparently, that while people are being put up for supposed health reasons, we are letting them kill themselves with their continued alcohol or other drug abuse. So they're walking to a convenience store across the street, and then get this, at least one has tested positive.
We have unnecessary contamination and infection spread in our city, in our region.
It's not known whether the man had tested positive or negative for the coronavirus, only that he was in quarantine. But according to the Kent police chief, two other people ordered into quarantine at the site also walked away last week, including one who had tested positive.
There will continue.
Isn't that lovely? So a guy positive for COVID-19 walks away from the motel that the taxpayers have bought, that they say is for a health crisis, but it's also for really for their future homelessness expansion. And they're just walking out into the community and putting everybody who lives down in the Kent area at risk. And this is the police chief in
Kent.
Continue
to be a percentage of people who will not follow the law. And that's where I think government needs to step in.
Chief Padilla is frustrated that not even security has the authority to detain patients, as King County's Department of Community and Human Services explained last month.
It's a voluntary system. There is not a public health order that can compel the person to stay where they are.
People are dying.
But by the way, that guy there, Leo Floor, he's the one that when they got busted, when they flew in from Spokane, the transgender stripper at the homelessness conference, Beyonce Black St. James, and then people, including us in the media, found out about it and said, wait a second, that's how we're spending our money on the homelessness? You got heroin addicts sleeping in the mud, and the agencies with King County that are supposed to be helping these people, they're flying in transgender strippers? It's unbelievable. So anyway, that guy, Leo Floor there, he's the one who said, oh, I'll just pay her out of my own pocket since we're getting busted on her invoicing the taxpayers for this. And again, my question is, Do we really think that people can deal with a global health pandemic and its impact on us in the Puget Sound area if 3 months earlier they were flying in transgender strippers to a homelessness conference? I have some severe doubts about the judgment of the people in charge here.
If it's serious, then take serious action. Serious action includes let's get some commitment orders for the people that won't self-isolate. If they're unwilling to keep the rest of us safe, then I think the government has a role to take a step and actually commit people.
Okay, so the police chief in Kent is confirming what I was able to bring you exclusively last week, that while Leo Floor and Dow Constantine have told us that the security guards are going to make sure people don't walk away. I had a quote from a security guard who said, they don't pay me enough to follow somebody who has a disease. And he said, by the way, nobody has told us to follow people who walk away. And then I contacted the police. And I said, so I'm told that the security guards are supposed to follow these guys, and then they're supposed to call you. And the cop, my source, said, there's absolutely nothing we can do until and unless, you know, Dow Constantine or Jay Inslee declare martial law. They can't pick up somebody who's walking down the street unless that person has a warrant signed by a judge. And so what we have is in Kent, as feared by the mayor and the police chief, came on my show a couple of weeks ago, and they told me they weren't consulted on this, and they were very upset that this was coming into their community. And up in Shoreline, the exact same thing, where people are walking away from the tent hospital up there. And by the way, these tent hospitals, since we're now finding out that, you know, while Inslee's sending back ventilators because the demand wasn't nearly as great as the people who were trying to create the greatest level of panic. So you send back those. We're not seeing any of the crisis in our hospitals and ERs that New York is seeing. We're building these tent hospitals on school district soccer fields in Shoreline. We're buying these motels to get federal dollars. And that's all that it's about. It's not about this global health crisis. It's not about taking care of the region. They want to have more homeless shelters, and they're using this to get that. And they want federal dollars that come by putting up things like tent hospitals on school district soccer fields. So just remember that these communities are getting infected. One person who tested positive walked away, bought a beer at the convenience store across the street from the Kent Motel, according to the police chief down there. So in other words, our politicians are supposed to be making us safer. They're making it worse. We are making us safer with mitigation, by staying at home, by washing our hands. We're doing a good job, but we're doing it in spite of our politicians, not because of them. And that is your big lead for today.
The big lead on Cairo Radio.
You got the word during our show yesterday that schools will remain closed through the end of the school year in June. But will they stay closed into the fall? There is a very real possibility of that. I'm going to talk to the superintendent of public instruction, Chris Rakedahl, and I went to Twitter to ask your questions. You have some tough questions for the superintendent, and I will not back away from asking them. I'll do that next when Chris Rakedahl joins me here on the Dory Monson Show. Heard it Live on my show yesterday afternoon, the governor and the superintendent of public instruction, Chris Rakedahl, announcing that our public schools will be closed through the end of the school year. I went on Twitter this morning and I asked if you had any questions for the school superintendent, and I've picked out a bunch of your best ones. Chris Rakedahl joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Superintendent, appreciate your time this afternoon.
Yeah, thank you, Dory. Good to hear from you.
Okay, so schools closed through the rest of the year. The biggest question I got from most of my listeners is, why make this call now? If in May the governor decides that it's time to get our economy rolling, it's time to start getting businesses open, why in the world not leave open the window of possibility of at least a last couple of weeks at school, let kids have that opportunity, especially the seniors? Why make the call now?
Yeah, we watched other states go that route where they close for 2 to 4 weeks, and then every couple of weeks they're telling people we're still closed and we're still closed. And our observation is it's really delayed the urgency to learn online and at a distance. And so we wanted to make even clearer that we expect students and families are being engaged by educators, that we're building learning models for them, and that we're getting after it. And the science points to this being much longer. That said, the governor made pretty clear in his remarks that if the science does change and there is an opportunity to bring back students, particularly seniors, that he will entertain that and he will consider that. So he gets to make that call down the road. But we thought better to just be more straightforward or more candid about the truth of the science and snap people's attention even further to learning, and then peel it back if it's an option. But honestly, Dory, based on the epidemiology, that is a very unlikely scenario.
Yeah, I don't see any way that that's going to happen. You also left open the possibility that the schools might be still closed in the fall, correct?
Yeah, you and I have been talking about this for as long as I've been coming on through this event with you. Without a vaccine, unfortunately, it ends the way it began. Lots of people get it. Lots of people have an antibody. So we get more confident that the spread will decrease. But if we go back to school in the fall and even one student or a teacher in a classroom of 30 kids in 900 square foot typical classroom has it, they're all getting it. And we're back to shutting down the whole school 2 to 5 days, cleaning it, doing all that contact tracing that you see the Department of Health doing, figuring out who else they were in contact with. So as I've tried to signal to you, and you've been really gracious to give me time to talk to your listeners, I have to prepare for the scenario where, short of a vaccine or significant what we call herd immunity, where lots of us have gotten it and recovered, short of that, I have to plan for the possibility that we're still at a distance this fall.
Well, and not just the schools. I mean, without a vaccine, we might not see large gatherings. We might not see baseball with fans in the stands. We might not see NFL or NCAA football in the fall. We may not have any large concerts. I know that that is one of the possible ramifications if a vaccine hasn't been developed. Okay, a couple of other things. Jay Inslee, in talking about this yesterday, he said this.
We know closing schools also presents challenges in the need for equity in education, and not only because of internet connectivity issues. Students learning English as a second language, students with disabilities, and other vulnerable students, we know this is a challenging time for their learning. So we are addressing this by allowing limited school activity for those students in school buildings that really follow social distancing guidelines.
Chris, from an epidemiological standpoint, that makes absolutely zero sense to me, that we're closing the schools because we want the kids to be apart from each other. We don't want there to be any spread. And yet we're going to take the SPED kids, we're going to take the ELL kids, and other, what the governor said, disadvantaged groups, and we're going to put them together in the school. That makes no sense from an epidemiological standpoint.
Yeah, I think you can expect a clarification about that today from our understanding, because those were in his remarks. Our understanding of the order is that it's still extremely narrow, and the only exceptions are food preparation for meals, the child care on the limited basis we've provided, in his original order always had this sort of life, safe, and health emergency thing. So not those services back in our schools from our understanding of the actual order, but those very narrow exceptions, right? A medically fragile student needs to meet with a health expert, but their facility's closed. I mean, we're talking extremely narrow, not for teaching and learning or instruction purposes. So I think that was clarified today.
That was simply wrong when the governor said that yesterday.
Well, I'm reading his order, and obviously the governor has to speak for himself and his remarks, but we're following the order, and we think it's still incredibly narrow, that opportunity.
Okay. Can I fly through three or four of these Twitter questions that I got and just ask you to give me a brief answer on these?
Sounds great.
This is from JW. He said, please ask why my high school kid's only assignment from school so far has been a link to CNN. Not one teacher has posted a lesson. Why are we paying teachers instead of laying them off after a failure to perform an essential role in even a minimal acceptable manner? What do you say?
Well, just like in normal times, there's definitely different engagements. We've asked every district to engage every family, build a learning plan, and be involved in learning. So we see incredible examples of full engagement around the state. And I will candidly tell you that we see examples that is not sufficient enough yet. And the push is out there. The expectation was those plans began on Monday, this last Monday, not 2 days ago, but a week ago. We're seeing the uptick on that get significantly better, but there are still places that we think are insufficient for engagement. And we've got them explaining to us right now what their plan is to get better at it over the next 10 weeks.
Well, where's the failure there? Because I've been paying a fortune in property taxes for, gosh, I think about 15 years since my district passed a technology levy. I mean, we've been spending an awful lot of money as taxpayers on technology in the schools, and now we're told that they weren't ready. So where's the failure? Where does the buck stop on what has been, in the view of a lot of parents, a pretty abject failure in online learning?
Well, I want a vaccine too, right? I mean, there's a lot of things right now that I wish were different. We've invested in our state in a face-to-face model like the other 50 states. So no state was ready for this at scale, for sure. But you see districts that are doing it exceedingly well, and they use their tech levy monies to build out devices and connectivity for families. Others just had enough technology money to try to get some labs in their schools or build science labs, which clearly are not operative right now. So we're a local control state, and it's always, always tough when you find yourself in a community that's not meeting your expectations. But that's why we elect local school boards. That's why we get to vote on our levies, bonds, and tech levies. That's why we get this chance to be in the democracy. It's
right,
really
but
good
you
in places,
said,
and it struggles in others.
You said you were not happy with the rollout in many districts. So does it stop with the superintendent of each district? I mean, because like you said, some have done a terrific job. The ones that have done a poor job, where does the buck stop? Should the superintendents of those districts be held accountable?
Yes, and me and the system, right? I mean, that's why the local voters elect local school board members who hire superintendents. That is exactly
okay.
How it works, and that's why they got to perform well.
Okay, let me get to a few more of these questions from Kay. Why is there more effort on daycare and meals than actual education? They are educators, not social workers. My tax dollars should be going to education first.
It's all of the above. This is what we normally do in schools, and we've got about a third of the take-up rate in food that we would normally do on a given day, and we've got about 2,000 students engaged in childcare, but we've got 80,000 educators in the learning model now and students being contacted and lesson plans being built. So it's all of the above. It's not one over the other.
All right, Superintendent. Tell you what, hold on. I've got a bunch of other questions from my listeners, your constituents. We'll continue with your questions for Chris Rakedahl next here on The Dory Monson Show. All right, the superintendent of public instruction, Chris Rakedahl, who's staying with us the rest of the half hour. I gathered a lot of your questions on Twitter, a couple of others here. You mentioned that a lot of schools have not rolled out anything meaningful in online teaching at this point. Are you still going to pay all the teachers, the ones who have not been working or have provided less than a 40-hour week? And another person wanted to know, are the taxpayers going to get any refund, maybe a prorated refund, since you're not going to hit the mandatory 180 days of instruction?
Well, learning is always a function of teachers making determination of kids, and so we're rolling out the model for everybody. It's definitely hit and miss in a couple spots, but getting significantly better. Your resources locally are a function of levy votes, and again, people will control that. Our state apportionment goes forward because these teachers are engaged in learning activities, and we're delivering food and child care. And the governor made it really clear he does not want us to contribute to the economic melees. Should we find ourselves this fall, again, not in a face-to-face model, undoubtedly that will be a different picture because there will not be the resources from the state, given the financial impact that's coming, to maintain the effort that we're trying to do now. And we'll have to rethink all of that this fall.
Okay, but I mean, the question was, if teachers have not been teaching for several weeks, and maybe it's, you know, the fault of the infrastructure, are there any ramifications for that financially? And are there any benefits to the taxpayer as far as prorated tax refunds?
This is a once-in-a-100-year global pandemic that's going to take hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of lives. I get the question. I think folks have to take a deep breath and understand how remarkable a moment that we are in. Every aspect of the public sector right now is trying to do its work, whether it's public utilities, clean waters, you know, building and construction, education, healthcare. Everyone's putting their best foot forward, and we're not getting rebates for the services that don't go well in this unprecedented crisis. But in time, if we cannot sustain this and the economy does as poorly as I think we're going to do, then yes, you will see reductions to the public sector, and that is a function of not having revenue. We are paying less taxes when there's less economic activity, but no one's getting punished right now because they're trying to put their best foot forward, and we're 3.5 weeks into this thing. We've got 10 weeks to go this year to get better at it, and I'm prepared for us to be even better at it this fall, but no state was prepared for this. We're no different. We're a little better prepared in terms of technology, we think, than a lot of states, but we are all struggling to something new.
I'm just sharing questions from my listeners, Chris. You sound like you're getting frustrated with me. I knew they were going to ask tough questions.
Never with you.
Okay, well, let me work on that. Let me play you one more clip from the press conference yesterday so in an effort to make you frustrated with me. Sean, play the clip from the superintendent from yesterday.
In the next decade, this state ought to lead the country in a belief that not only should everyone have access to health care, which we have clearly been a leader on nationally, but if there is anyone today who does not see telecom and connectivity as an essential utility, much like water and clean air, then I would challenge them to think about our history.
Okay. This is one of the things that does drive me crazy, Chris, whether it's sex ed in the schools or you at a press conference yesterday pushing for health care for all, which is a Democrat's dream. It sounds to me that the social justice causes at times take priority over the education cause for you. And that when I heard you pressing for, you know, single payer health care or whatever format you're hoping for, I thought, man, that's
your
seems,
words, not mine.
That
did,
okay. Would you like single payer health care?
I want health care for everybody. I don't know what form it should take.
Okay. But is that appropriate at a press conference where you're announcing the schools are closed for the year to insert your social cause?
Well, those are your words, not mine. A public utility is something we all pay for. I don't think government should make everything free for people. I still pay for water, but I'm really glad it's a public utility. And I pay for my telecom services, my cable, my phone. It doesn't mean we don't all share in the cost, and it can still be private. But we have to create connectivity. If you said to kids, you're all going to pay
fine
for
with the internet
school,
stuff. I'm talking about the healthcare.
Yeah.
I mean, internet's a utility. I'm talking about the healthcare. That's something that we hear more at a political convention and not at as somber a press conference as, you know, telling kids and parents schools are closed for the rest of the year.
I see the connection here. No, I mean, look at the way I opened that and the way I always open it. This is first and foremost a public health crisis. So people are definitely worried about learning, but first and foremost, they're definitely worried about their health right now. So the pairing here is, wouldn't it be incredible if everyone had the ability to get treatment and get health care that they need and the learning continues? So those are consistent thoughts in my mind, and I know you don't agree with that, but I do think everyone should have health care, and I think every kid should be connected to the web. I just think it would be better for learning, better for families.
Yeah, I think that's coming. I think the private market will take care of that pretty darn quick on the connectivity. All right, Chris, I always enjoy talking with you, and I always appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on with me today.
Thank you, Dory.
All right, Superintendent of Public Instruction, Chris Rakedahl. Love to hear your thoughts. You can text us at 98973. That's 98973, and we do have lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show.